So I've been in the Skaldic spirit of doing all my Norse poetry and practicing it, and I like it a lot, the flighting of Assassin's Creed Valhalla. And I was wondering if anybody wanted to step to me and challenge me to like a flighting battle and do like a little
that.
Slam. I guess
that.
It's kind of like slam.
Absolutely.
It's a rap battle.
We gotta do this. Russ, get him.
Russ, yeah. So Russ, do you want me to start or do you want you to start? Why don't you start and I'll come back at you with the flight. Okay.
I am the best at the rhymes. There is no better. Step to me, Griff, and you'll get wetter.
Hey, don't fucking talk to me like that. Hey, shut up. You can't talk to me like that.
Okay, now you know. I know where you went wrong there.
What's wrong?
There was no meter to that, and there was no rhyme to that.
You're right. Russ, why don't you give me another prompt, and this time I'll do it way better.
Okay,
and
sure.
I definitely won't do it bad as a joke again.
My name is Russ, and I'm super cool. Step to me, Griffin, and you'll get wetter.
Do you want to fight me physically? You can't talk to me like this.
You think one day historians will say, probably the funniest Bessie's intro ever was the one that required a knowledge of an obscure minigame within another video game that had just recently been released.
Or
that's what the historians will say.
Or like proper Skaldic literature, which I assume all of our listeners know a thing or two about.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best. You know what? I'm not going to step into that. I know one of the two consoles that is coming out this generation.
My name is Griffin McElroy. I'm going to just call it for PlayStation 5, baby. We did it again, Cass.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best console of the week.
My name is Russ Series X Frushstick, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in video gaming entertainment. It is a game of the year show that goes all year long. King of the Hill book club for video games. It's this show, but this week it's jam packed. It's honestly hurting my brain. We have so much to talk about. I'm not going to take a long time. We're talking about the Xbox Series X and Series S, the Xbox Series is, and Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Yeah.
Chris, what's the Xbox? They already did one.
So this is it's another Xbox, but it has a little more power. And the Assassin's Creed that we're talking about, it's another Assassin's Creed, but it has a little more power.
This episode's like one of those dual pack boxes of nerds, and that comparison actually works on so many levels.
We'll be right back after this, and we're going to dive deep inside an Xbox. I bet it's hot in there.
Who's got one?
Who's got one? Who's got the Xbox?
Plant and I both have used the Xbox Series X quite extensively at this point.
Just to clarify, do you have one on the way? Do you have one pre-ordered, or are you waiting?
No, okay. I am a Sony crony.
Yeah,
By which it means I couldn't.
I could not find one. I could not find one either. I checked this morning my Amazon pre-order for the PlayStation 5. Still saying going to get here tomorrow before 10 p.m., but hasn't shipped yet. So not feeling great about that one. Jeff Bezos, if you could fast track me, baby, that would be great.
I used to do a podcast called the Joystick Podcast, and I emailed my old co-host, Ludwig Kietzmann. I thought we were good friends still. Email him, say, send me one of those boxes. I'm an influencer. Didn't get a respondioni from Ludwig. No response on that one, which he is well within his rights to do. That
Absolutely.
Is probably the same decision. So no, I do not have one.
All right.
I do not have one coming.
Let's talk about.
So I'm going to be pretty down on it. So feel Chris, better because that's the console wars, baby.
Chris and Russ, y'all got the X, right? I'm
yes.
assuming not the S. Okay,
yeah. Correct.
We've talked about it. I think the past couple episodes, but I feel like The limiters are off, and we can really talk about whatever, because now everybody can have one.
Can we talk about the box itself first?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think fine place to start.
I spent a lot of time, I think it was the last episode or the episode before, I spent a lot of time talking about the PlayStation 5 tower, the enormity of it, that like just great,
the curves.
It's an ice cream sandwich. I talked a lot about it. So I was expecting something like at least quasi comparable when the Xbox showed up.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that I love the Xbox box design, but put it next to the PlayStation and it is like a warm cup of cocoa for me.
Right. Mm. It's a box. Like, you
it's
know,
just
you
a
know
fucking box.
What it is. It's box. Just a fucking box.
What about the box that it arrives in? Oh, what they did a tell very me good about job. The Xbox box
plant.
Box.
It's so nice. This is a stupid thing because none of this matters because you forget it 10 minutes after you've opened the boxes. The PS5 comes in a box and it's like, I don't know, wrapped in plastic. Congratulations.
Wrapped in plastic.
Wrapped in plastic. The Xbox Series X, they spent so much money trying to make it feel like luxury brand. It very much is influenced by this new trend of like, oh, you are the elite. You've opened this and it kind of lifts towards you and sits in this perfect little chamber. And it has it's surrounded by little marketing pamphlets.
It's like the best fucking Trapper Keeper ever. Like, yeah, it's got those little pockets, it's got little tear love points. That. It just
love this.
It's now very high quality.
Did they ship it in something separate, in a separate container when it came your way?
So the Xbox came in an Xbox box, which came in an Xbox box.
So is it an X? So you got it in an Xbox box.
Yeah,
this is hysterical.
I know I probably shouldn't spend so much time in the review on this, but that box was not as good.
Okay, our audience is going to turn on us so quickly if we don't actually talk about the box within the box.
When the truck was transporting it,
it was a box.
When it was
truck.
In a shipping crate,
right,
over from China, would you say it was in an Xbox box?
Well, there was. You know how Amazon uses third-party companies sometimes? It was actually shipped in Al's Biggs box, Xbox box.
Okay.
And then they pulled it out. Anyway, here's how the
mind.
Xbox box works.
Now, if you attempted to fight the truck that was carrying them over, would you be boxing an Xbox box?
Here's how the Xbox works. The Xbox Series X is a considerably more powerful Xbox One, effectively, right now. They both play all the same stuff. Here is the selling point for the Xbox Series X. Hey, would you like to have all the amenities that people have had in PC gaming for the past, I don't know, 3 to 5 years? And you'd like to have it pretty comparably cheaper and just have it plug into your TV and work? That's the Xbox Series X. It does it.
Sorry, by amenities, you mean from a performance perspective?
So I mean
yes.
Things like ray tracing. I mean things like 4K that is actually reliable. I mean up to 120 frames per second speeds, and definitely 60 frames. I mean like super, super, super fast load times. And there are a few things that honestly it does better than my very high-end PC. The big one being switching between games.
Yeah, the quick resume.
Quick resume
is all I hear about.
Which, as somebody who has a short attention span and loves to bounce between games, especially more arcade games over the course of an evening, I love it. But I'm curious, Fresh, what do you think? Because I don't think it's a secret that I'm pretty high on this console.
Yeah, you're next spot. I know. I'm aware. okay, so before it arrived, I was definitely like questioning, hey, who is this for? What is the purpose? I think I would second Plant's statement, which is to say like, it's actually kind of perfect for me. We've talked about it before, how I'm running on a 1080 graphics card and Watch Dogs shit the bed when I tried to run it. I played Watch Dogs last night. Unlike Assassin's Creed, which we'll get to, Watch Dogs runs at 30 frames per second, but it's like a buttery 30 frames per second. Like doesn't
On the
Series X.
Huh.
Well, it has ray tracing on like
Assassin's it's got Creed. Like a lot of build. It looks very nice, but that is really the like use case for me where I know for sure that my current computer cannot run new 3D games. It just can't, or at least not well. And now I have this thing that I know for sure for the next 3, probably 4 years, I'm going to be able to run these new games. Maybe it's not as good as like the NVIDIA 5000 series that comes out in 2 years, but certainly stably and smoothly, I'll be able to run all these games. And I'm paying $500 versus
the
like,
value proposition seems like out of this world. Like so for what you get for $500, it's compared to what it would take to create a similar PC, it's like not even.
Oh
close.
Yeah, no, you're looking at I would say $1,300 to make like something comparable
at minimum, and you have to build it.
Yeah.
What is, so I want some perspective from the two of you, because I think this is the thing that will, and I've heard different takes on this for both consoles, and I imagine we'll be talking about the PS5 next week once we will hopefully have our hands on it. What is, can you compare the jump from the Xbox One S to the Xbox Series X, Jesus Christ. Can you compare that to the jump that we had from the 360 to the Xbox One, right? Like, what is the generational leap like this time compared to the generational leap last time?
It's smaller. I think it's a lot smaller.
Okay, that's interesting, because I've heard a lot of people say it's bigger.
I would say the opposite. I think that they're almost impossible to compare. And maybe I should, sorry, I'm in a tangent, and hopefully that answers your question. I think what we're seeing with PS5 and Xbox Series X is a fundamental shift in, like, what is the value and purpose of a console? And I think PS5 gets at the general, like, generational leap that you're talking about, right? Like, that's the whole point, is to be a big, significant generational leap that powers a certain type of games. Where I think Xbox Series, whatever, going on indefinitely, is more about choice. And I do think the Series X will be comparable to the PS5, but it's just not even aspiring to that sort of thing. Like, it's not putting games on it that are meant to, like, flaunt that. It is meant to be a more powerful means of playing all of your games and for them to look better. In the same way that when you update your phone every other year, you're accomplishing something very similar.
It's like a really nice Kia. Like a really nice Kia, which is to say, it is a workhorse. It might not be a splashy workhorse, but it does the trick.
I drive a Kia.
Yeah, a really nice Kia.
A really nice Kia. I do think that the big difference between the 360 to Xbox One versus Xbox One to this is I prefer all these quality of life improvements. I prefer the faster frame rates. I prefer the faster load times. The obsession with, like, oh, it's just more graphics, that doesn't do it for me as much anymore.
Well, you have a PC that does that stuff.
Well,
already.
not even that though. Like, I just think games look good. Like, at a certain point, we're hitting diminishing returns.
Games look good.
Like, games look good. You know, we've come a long way.
Gun to my head. Like, if there isn't a puddle reflecting something, I can't tell ray tracing is on. I just can't. I've tried. I've really tried. I agree with Plant. I think performance is the star of this generation. Like, running games smoothly and well is the star. I also agree that it seems like Sony is trying to push those boundaries a little harder in terms of what their hardware can pull off. But
it's the features that, like, I actually, because I'm in the same boat. Yeah. Like, for me, performance in terms of, like, frame rate is more important to me than, like, how games look, because that's the thing I can actually, like, it's very discernible the difference between a 30 and a 60 and a 120, like, game. For me, it's like the feature set of them. And that's where I think the comparison gets interesting, because the PlayStation 5 doesn't quite have that, like, quick resume swap between games feature necessarily. Mm-hmm. But it does have, you know, the integrated hard drive and the, like, wild fast load. Like, from what I have heard, obviously we'll have a better picture of this next week, but that is, like, the more sort of standout feature for PS5. And because they have, you know, first party launch games, they have games that are better at, like, showcasing that stuff.
What was the first thing that you guys did when you got your Xboxes?
That actually goes to what Griffin's talking about, and a thing that I do like about the Xbox a little more than the PS5. And we'll talk about the many things that are excellent about the PS5 next week. Here's the point. Backwards compatibility on Xbox is closer to a PC, which means that it will actually upgrade how it works.
Yeah,
it is not how it works on the PS5.
Yes, games on the PS5 will effectively need to be patched to really make use of it, whereas there are a lot of games on Xbox that just, like, automatically. The fact that, really, Crackdown came out in, what, 2005? What, 2007? Something like that? And the fact that, like, it up-reses automatically and unlocks the
adds
frame
HDR.
Rate. Like, crazy.
That's because it's coming from, like, the, you know, Microsoft PC world. Like, they have the infrastructure to handle up-resing like that, where it's more of a sort of specialty case, I feel like, on PlayStation.
I think that actually discounts, like, the work that was done. There's also years of work on backwards compatibility to actually make sure it works. Yeah. I think it's just a prioritization of resources.
I know about the consoles. I'm a gamer. I was not specifically aware of that distinction you just made. It's weird to me that in the lead up to these devices, especially when they knew the floor was falling out on the games, that they weren't like hitting those marketing notes harder. Like those would have been my beats that I was like circling around as like, and I know that it's hard to do that because you don't want to be backwards looking when you know you're trying to sell a new box, but I feel like that's a pretty big selling point, especially since like for a while we don't have new stuff.
What's on the horizon for Xbox? Horizon. Like what's the what is like the big what's like the next first party game? Like what's the thing that people have to, obviously, like, you know, you got your Halos and what have you, but like I feel like I, as a person who is fairly plugged in, like I don't even know like what is the killer app that people are looking forward to in the near future.
I don't think anyone would argue the fact that like Microsoft Studios game development has been very light, which is obviously why they did that Bethesda acquisition, which is such a huge deal, which solves a lot of their problems. But you're right, like outside of Halo, there like aren't a lot on the horizon that are like quote Xbox games.
And Halo will be fall.
Yeah, and but not even everything that you see about Halo though, like doesn't get me that inspired about Halo. So like even that is hearing about like, you know, the
yeah, but Halo's Halo. I mean, like Halo's a massive thing, everybody's gonna play.
But that doesn't guarantee that it's gonna be it. I very little has inspired confidence in me about Halo because of what the turnover at the studio and what they've shown off not being like especially ambitious.
I think even forgetting Halo, I think this is true of both Sony and Microsoft and honestly Nintendo right now. Until the pandemic is under control and like right. We know how markets are going to work and we know how timetables are going to work for development, I think you're seeing everybody staying buttoned up about committing to anything. So sure. I don't think we'll know what's coming out for any of these consoles until basically the market stabilizes and these companies feel comfortable. I mean, again, the same reason we don't know literally anything about Nintendo beyond like December 12th.
Yeah. Yeah. But they couldn't even get one. Like that is the thing I keep coming back to is I will get a Series X at some point. Like I love, you know me, boys, I love tech.
Yep.
But like for PlayStation 5, it could just be Demon's Souls. Like it could just be, and that would like something to hang my hat on. Sure. Or just like I am getting this box so that I can play this thing. And while I will certainly play the hell out of some old, you know, 360 games when I get that Series X, it's like doesn't feel imperative in the way that PS5 does.
This is okay, but this gets at the point of it for me, and this is why I think that like it kind of makes sense. Is I was thinking about this because the iPhone 12 is like circling around the world currently. The mini, I think, are going to start coming out. This week as you're listening to this. There is not this pressure of a killer like people view, and I know this is like a dumb comparison, but like people use the upgrade their phones constantly, and it's almost never for like this giant thing they couldn't do with the old phones. It's just to be viewing the device as part of their, you know, digital life, for lack of a better term. And the big quality of life improvements are the selling point. I mean, if you contextualize this like a phone, like all the things you do on it will be faster and better.
Yeah.
That's the selling point. And that has been enough for people to keep upgrading their phones for a decade.
And this is for way more than any like, phone in existence.
Yeah,
right now.
Of course.
Right. They still play, you make the calls, you tell the time, you look at tweets on the toilet. Like it is the same basic experience from the beginning. It's just like the quality of life stuff is constantly improving. Yeah. And like, that's what these boxes are.
I also think for our audience, for a lot of our audience, PS5 is like the clear choice, right? If you're somebody who listens to a video game podcast and you play a variety of games, you're probably going to do what Griffin is talking about and like go pick up another Xbox at some point. Maybe it'll be the Series S or X. Maybe it'll be a next generation. But right now, getting these like exclusives is well worth it. But if you are like, I would assume, the majority of video game players and you play Call of Duty, Fortnite, Madden, maybe Grand Theft Auto, and maybe a few other things, what's the difference, right?
That's the big thing I keep coming back to. And it's like, I'm excited for PlayStation 5, and I think about it as like, that's probably going to be the console that I play games with my friends on. Like, that's probably where we're going to land, just because we all landed on PS4 this last generation. And ultimately, like, that's the thing that matters to me. But all I play, and all anybody plays for the most part, is games of service games. And I think Sony shot themselves right in the foot last generation by proving like, hey, you guys might not be the most dependable ones to like put all of my life hours and stock into playing Fortnite or Destiny or whatever, if you're going to be like hyper protective in a weird old fashioned way about that stuff. Because if the Xbox plays that shit like really, really well and has like all of these quality of life features and also is not going to lock me down arbitrarily, like maybe that is the better option.
I feel like launch lineups for the future, or at least the foreseeable future, will feel more like this, what's happening right now, than we... I think about VR a lot, where like VR couldn't get traction because it never got the, you know, the, that one thing that you had to play on it. And I feel like we are going to start. And why is that? Because it's like very expensive and the base isn't there. And it's expensive to make a AAA game with the base size not being there. I feel like the reason we don't have the huge launch lineup is probably in part COVID for sure. But like also it's really expensive to make games for a console, and when the console base isn't as big, it doesn't make sense. Yeah. So like these games that like bridge the gap and those being the experiences that you look forward to, I feel like that's going to be, because games are getting so expensive to make. I mean, and just getting more and more expensive. I feel like that is the launch lineups for the future will look more like this, where it's like you, people start focusing on the quality of life improvements versus the like what new games is the are the other people left out?
Can I talk about the controller? Because
yeah,
I do
please.
Wanna...
Yeah, please, please, please.
Okay, so I
do you have it? I wish you'd start bringing this stuff, Russ.
What?
Do you have it with you?
Oh, you want me to like hold it in front of the camera?
I would like to see it just for me.
I mean,
just
I imagine it looks
photo.
Indiscernible from a it
looks like an Xbox.
Look at a photo. I don't believe that you have
but
it.
But that's the point. Is like it looks, I would say, very similar to an Xbox controller. There are definite improvements. They add like grippies on the back, and the D-pad is much, much better than it was in the last generation of Xbox controller. And I would say like that controller I use on PC all the time. It is a workhorse. You plug it in, it works, like guaranteed. It's like very on brand with the rest of the Xbox lineup. It does feel though, especially having used the PS5, and I've talked about it before, we'll talk about it more next week. It does feel like after 7 years, Xbox could have maybe reached a little further than they did. It feels like very safe. It's a very, very good controller. It's a controller I'm happy to use, but I was thinking of other like past generations, and in terms of like generational leaps, controller wise, it's maybe the smallest generational controller leap I've ever seen. If you compare it to like, you look at like GameCube to Wii to whatever, those are pretty weird. But even like PS3 to PS4, PS4 added like a touchpad and the glowing light and other little doodads. And this is really just a slightly redesigned Xbox One controller, which again, not bad, but I do think the hardware improvements that Sony made to their controller is going to be a big deciding factor in some of these like really experiential games, especially if third parties start taking advantage of those features, which as a matter of fact, they seem to be like adaptive triggers and stuff like that.
Just real quick, I wanted to go down because we touched on it, but I think it's worth mentioning. I'm looking at a list from the Imagine Games Network about... from the Imagine Games Network about... The Xbox exclusives. Mm. So, like, here's the stuff that we still know, almost no time frames on it.
And these are all coming to PC as well, I'm pretty sure, right?
I would assume, yeah. As Dusk Falls, which is like it's like a Quantic Dream style thing.
Hell yeah.
Avowed, which is that's a new Obsidian Entertainment IP. It looks kind of like Skyrim-y. You know the one?
No.
Okay, they did it at one of those showcases.
Yeah.
Echo Generation. Don't know what that is. Everwild. That's from Rare.
Yeah.
It's a new Rare thing. Everwild. XO1, XOMecha. Both of those are things. Fable.
Maybe.
At some point.
Yeah, it's made by Playground Games, who has made fantastic Forza games.
Have they actually announced that?
I think they did finally announce it last E3.
Forza probably at some point, Puyo Puyo Tetris 2, State of Decay 3, Setsuna's Saga, Hellblade 2, Scorn, Tell Me Why, the new Don't Nod thing, The Medium from Bloober Team, That's it.
I feel like a lot
and
of
Halo, the, and Halo, obviously.
I think a lot of those could be really cool. Like, this is how I feel about it. Xbox Series X, I feel like, has a lot of potential, both from like the hardware side and the infrastructural side, but also like I didn't know most of those games existed, and but there's some big names attached to them. So like maybe this will be the console of like surprising unknowns and like surprise killer apps, whereas like the PlayStation 5, I think we all have a pretty good grasp on what's going to be coming out on that in the next year or so.
Sorry, there's a few more on here I just want to mention that I missed earlier because they were highlighted green for some reason. Crossfire X from Smilegate. If you guys know what any of these are, please tell
me. Crossfire X is the weird Remedy multiplayer / shooter thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think we need to read any more of these. I think
Psychonauts 2?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
Sea of Thieves?
Yeah, I mean, just to like put a bow on it.
The Ascent.
I think with these games and with Game Pass, which we've talked about a lot, is a very, very good deal. Especially if you're a sort of person that like is not going to buy a game every month, but just wants to like stay in the loop on things. I think the Xbox is like a very solid, dependable choice. I don't know that it's necessarily going to be the like, you're going to get it and it's going to blow your mind the second you plug it into your TV. Especially if you don't have a decent gaming PC right now, it's a great spot. And Plan is making all sorts of emoji faces.
Yeah, we gotta move on.
Moving on. We're going to talk about Assassin's Creed Valhalla right after this. Stay tuned. The Creed is back, and we're taking it to Viking country this time. Well, sort of. We're taking it to Viking times, and then the Vikings leave Viking country to go eat England. Their big mutton legs and their axes. Okay, can I start?
Sure. Uh-huh.
Because I play a lot of it. I don't know. Assassin's Creed Valhalla is, I would say, I tend to chunk off the Assassin's Creed games into like big sort of like swaths of them. There's like, there's big steps and then there's little steps. I would say this is a very much in the spirit of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, where it's much more of an action game. It's action focused. Obviously still like a big open world, lots of different
action RPG storylines. I'd say there's a lot of role playing.
Exactly. Stuff. Yeah. A lot of like upgrading skills and gear collection and what have you.
Yeah. A lot of armor with numbers on it in a way that, is sort of a pet peeve of mine, but I think is handled a lot better here than it is in say like God of War or honestly the past Assassin's Creed games.
I'm trying to think of the best way, like if you wanted to like know, I feel like you kind of already know if you're going to play one of these. I would say it is much more an evolution than a revolution in terms of Assassin's Creed, but a lot of stuff has been refined, I think, in a way that makes the experience a lot smoother. The combat, I would say, is one of the big things that I felt like was a big step up. There are, in addition to your like stealth stuff, there are abilities that you can map to the different face buttons. If you pull left trigger, they're like ranged abilities, and right trigger, they're like melee abilities. You can have four mapped there, and you have to find these skill books in the world. And those really do, and you basically fill up adrenaline by doing a bunch of attacks, then you can do one of these specials. These special abilities. And I thought that was a cool way of really mixing up combat to make it feel different. There's like a skill where you can highlight a bunch of enemies and then let it go and you'll shoot arrows at all of them. Or like you can just chuck a bunch of axes at people or do a ram and where you can like knock people off the thing. There's even like a little scorpion pole.
Yeah.
You want to fling your scorpion thing.
Just on that specific, just speaking to the combat, I haven't played an Assassin's Creed game since 4. It's been like 7 years.
You missed Odyssey?
I skipped Odyssey. I didn't play Syndicate. Like there was a bunch of Assassin's Creed games I didn't play.
Syndicate.
So it's very weird for me to jump into one and see like what's changed and what hasn't. It's been very interesting. Specifically on the combat, and I agree with everything you said about the abilities. They're very, very cool. One thing I remember about combat in 4 Assassin's Creed and like a lot of the older Assassin's Creed games is you basically stand in the center of like a bunch of guys and you wait for them to attack and you counter their attack and then you do an assassination to insta-kill them. That was like the combat. And now what they've basically done is made the combat feel much more direct and like you're more in control of the situation. So as a Viking, I can charge into a room with a giant hammer and just like slam guys down. And that is like an actual strategy you can use. You are not like penalized for using that strategy. In fact, you're almost encouraged because you earn more agility. Adrenaline that way to use your abilities. So yeah, you can really whirlwind your way through. And I think based on the theming, because it is Vikings, the combat feels very heavy and very intense. Like you knock guys like off ledges all the time or into walls all the time. It's like so heavy and makes me feel like much more directly in control of what's going on, which I really like.
Yeah. Can I talk about my one big favorite addition to the combat really quick?
Please, yeah.
So I love using the bow and arrow. But in this game, you are like, as Frosh said, heavily motivated to pick up a very heavy object and just bludgeon people with it. But each character now has weak points that when you aim the bow at them, kind of like, you can almost kind of see into them, like there's like a little sun glowing inside of a different body part. And if you hit that, or some of the larger enemies, they have multiple, they hobble to the ground, and then you can deal effectively like a finishing blow on them, which is basically essential as if you are going into areas that are outside your current ranking of all of your whatever weapons and gear. And being able to go into a really tough area and just wreck bosses that are way outside your range by diving into combat, firing an arrow at their toe, and then like one at their shoulder, them falling down, and then you just taking their head clean off. Feels pretty good.
It's nasty.
I to continue to stick with like gameplay mechanic type stuff, before we get into more narrative and world stuff, I feel like stealth is harder than it is ever. It does not seem designed for a stealthy approach into a situation. I feel like I get spotted constantly. I feel like it is not wanting that sneaky, like, and as far as I can tell, there's no gameplay incentive for like, go clean out this base without triggering any, like alarms are very de-emphasized as far as I can see. It still happens, but it's not like when you got spotted in previous Assassin's Creed games, there was kind of a running timer in your head, like, I'm going to have to find the guy who's trying to call reinforcements because I know it's going to be a problem. Here, it's kind of like, yeah, bring him. I'm a Viking, so I'll probably just chop all your heads off.
Well, it also has that Ghost of Tsushima thing of just, like, challenging. Like, when you roll up to raid an outpost, like, there's not going to be sneaking that's going to happen that time. It's just basically a bunch of yelling people with axes just charging forward. At that point, like, stealth isn't, you can try and be sneaky about it, but Wicked don't have to.
You actually have choice in a number of missions. The game just doesn't make it especially clear. It kind of like signals like, raid, that's what you want to do, right? Well, I mean, if you wanted to get off your boat and then just try to go on your own, you can do that, but wouldn't you prefer to raid with like 20 dudes with hammers?
The answer, by the way, is yes. It is, but the crew in this game is better than it has been. Assassin's Creed has usually been kind of a lonely game. You know what I mean? It's like me versus the world. The thing this does cool is like you have this horn that you can blow. It's like, hey, I need some more Vikings up in here. And they'll just roll up like eight dudes. And then the raids where all your Vikings are like doing stuff and trying to help you roll a territory, it feels like there's other stuff going on. Like you run through a battlefield and it feels like there is a fight going on that you could influence. And that is actually like not completely dependent on you. There is sometimes those situations where it's like, there's one guy you need to kill to finish the mission. And like, you know, you have seven dudes over there and they're just kind of like messing with the guy, I guess, until the boss comes over and gets the final hit.
I would say, I think it's very cool that you can mix those two. I've played like, tried to do missions stealthy and tried to do missions aggressively. So I did one where I had to sneak into a monastery and basically assassinate this guy. And I was able to get, you know, up into the rafters to above the guy that I was supposed to assassinate without anyone spotting me. And that was great. But he had a bunch of guards around him. So while I was up there, I called my raid people, my other fellow Viking friends. They show up from outside, the guards around him leave to go fight them, and I can kill this guy without even being bothered. So you really can mix and match, which is extremely, extremely cool.
Another mechanics thing that I wanted to touch on, and I would love to get your guys' thoughts on this. I feel like the skill tree as it is, skill web, perhaps, in this game, is truly terrible. And I cannot imagine that it was released in this form. It is one of the worst of these I've ever seen in my entire life.
Do you like the sphere grid from Final Fantasy X? Because this is a kind of a bad version of that already pretty bad system.
Here's what's wild about this thing is you get experience points, you get 2 ability points when you level up, and you can just spend those ability points to unlock this skill tree. And the skill tree is really a web of like mechanical upgrades that are less substantial, like health increase 1% or, you know, range defense 0.5%, whatever, incremental stuff, health. And then every once in a while along this web, you encounter a larger thing, like you add another thing to your adrenaline bar or you get new abilities, right? Except you can't see what all these abilities are until you're fairly...
Fog of war.
Yeah, exactly. There's a fog of war on your abilities, so you can't tell when you get close to them. Also, there's 3 paths that you can go down. There's like a red that's like melee, and there's ranged, and you know that kind of deal. But like, there is not a clear delineation of what that means or where you should spend your points, because it's not like all the melee attack upgrades are up here and all the health upgrades are down here. It's not like that. You encounter both along the path, so you're just guessing.
Yeah,
but... Wait, let me just address that real quick. Yeah. It is. I'm not saying it's great. It is a very clumsy system. It's not ideal, but they do one smart thing. Actually, 2 smart things. One, you can respec at any time for no cost. It's completely free. You can just respec.
Always a show of confidence in your upgrade system.
Not great, but still. And 2, which was smart. Once you reveal areas of the map and then you respec, those areas stay revealed. You can still see those.
I don't know if that's true. I think after you turn off... I don't know if this is still the case, but we were having people test it, and after you turned off the game and restarted, it would go back to having Fog of War over the areas that you didn't respec against.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. Anyway, here's my point about it. I think game designers... I hate being... giving instructions to game designers. I'm just sharing my experience of what I see from being with Polygon. You have to recognize that people play your game beyond your game. And by that, I mean, if you make a system like that, and the entire point is, well, we don't want you knowing what's ahead. People are just going to Google it. You've already lost. So, like, sorry, that's just not a choice. And now you have people who are playing your game and are getting pissed off because they're Googling to figure out how your system works, rather than embracing this, like, mystery that you're trying to create. And I think you do have to, like, you have to compromise.
The mystery is a problem, but it's also very frustrating to, like, know that there are, like, for instance, I would see, you know, things that reference an additional ability or additional adrenaline bar, which I didn't have and didn't know where it was. And so I'm leveling up and wanting to customize to the style of play that I am using, which should be the entire idea of the skill tree.
Right.
And I can't, because I don't know where the adrenaline thing is that I'm trying to get to. It's so unintuitive. It makes no sense. It's truly awful.
Even without all that stuff, even without all the mystery and the unnecessary fog of war stuff, I'm going to bang this fucking drum any time that a game does this. The first skill point you get, you can go in any of these 3 directions, right? And the first nodes on these 3 branches, and a majority of the nodes on these skill trees, will say something like, and this is not like a goof, like stealth plus 1.6.
Yeah.
And it's like, guys, I don't know what the fuck that means. Like, I guess it makes my stealth better, but I have no context for what this number means or why it needs to be so granular that it goes to like the tenths of a percentage place. It drives me up a wall when it's like, and I have just started playing this game and I feel like a good RPG or action RPG has to at least hide this primordial desire to watch the numbers go up, and they're not even cloaking it anymore.
Well, the weird thing is they got rid of it with weapons. Odyssey, you know, Odyssey's whole thing was, oh, every time you kill somebody, you get a new weapon. And they got rid of that, which I think was a great choice.
I actually don't agree. On the weapons, I've also struggled with, like, I found a set that kind of complimented me, and I haven't switched my weapons or... armor for
that's fine hours. Like, I think that's a fine outcome of that. Like, I think that's
no, because I want to be able to experience other stuff without feeling like I'm handicapping myself because I don't have the thing level up, and I also don't want to waste a bunch of points leveling something up if it's not going to be something I enjoy using.
But you at least know what it, you know what it means and you know what it does, which is not something that you can say for ranged plus 2.1. Yeah, like, yeah, it, yeah. And it's such fluff. It's so unnecessary.
I want to get into the story, but really quick, one thing I want to talk about, and then I swear we'll get into the story. The violence in the game.
Very violent.
Considerably more violent than any Assassin's Creed game. I'm curious how it all hit you.
Yeah, not great. There's a assassination, not even an assassination. It's like one of those stun final blow hits where the guy reaches his hands up in front of him to block himself, and you bring an axe down into his head, cutting off both of his hands in the process.
I literally have this in my notes. The
it
exact
is
same one.
Not and, but, and not not only that,
you're both
they
smiling.
Also,
you loved it. You're nasty.
The one that I thought was like truly horrific actually was an animal. There's a lynx, which is like a wild cat, right?
The time sweeper.
Yes, the time sweeper. And you kill the lynx, but when, every single time that I have killed a lynx, it initiates the same kill animation, which is the lynx jumps at you. You stab it in the neck with your in my case, my little axe. It realizes it is going to die. So it tries to run away from you. You grab it by its back and stab it again, at which point it appears that it loses its connections to its legs, and now it is pulling itself away by its front arms, at which point you grab it by the scruff of its neck and bash its head in.
It's cool. We're all agreed on that. All the violence is awesome. We need to get to like story and world so we can talk about like overall, because that is actually where I'm struggling the most. The story is nonsense. I mean, it's like you're trying to fight somebody.
It's like a Viking tropey kind of story, which is to say you're basically
building an alliance, but with that they have not very super clearly established like the villain and why you hate him so much and why you need an alliance. There's also not a moment where this is actually very interesting. A lot of games like this begin with a sort of all is lost, like huge attack on you and yours where you're wiped out and it's just you. This is an interesting twist on that where like you leave your house to go fuck up other people's houses, and that is your plan. Like, I'm gonna go over there and mess things up for them because I'm a Viking and that's how we do it, which feels like natural for Vikings.
Like, I would say, broadly speaking, the story does not do a lot for me because it feels too tropey and non-specific. I think the only times where that deviates, and this is kind of a Witcher thing, is in the like some of the like ISO side missions get very weird and funny and interesting, and they're like self-contained. But the second I'm doing any of the main story missions, it's like, oh, this king wants to take over this king. And I'll be honest, like after 10 hours, I just started hit slamming B to skip through dialogue. And I know they work super hard. I feel bad about that. I didn't review it, so it's fine. But it just like the like very serious Viking stuff doesn't do it for me one iota.
I do think the moment-to-moment dialogue is very well written. I think the moment-to-moment dialogue
and
is
well performed.
Very well performed. Yeah. I agree. I think the thing that it's missing that Odyssey had, one, I think Odyssey's villain, while not revealed till much later in the game, was still somewhat clear, but Odyssey also had the cult pulling you through the game, and I think the cult was like, for me, enough to keep me going through everything. Where I was like, this doesn't make sense, but I'm sure it's the cult.
They do have a similar idea in this game, but it feels very mechanical. Yeah. And it actually touches on the other thing I want to say, which is like the assassin connection in this game is
so tenuous.
Yeah.
Yeah, y'all, it is. This is not a spoiler. There are some assassins in it, and they're like, do you want a wrist blade? And the Viking's like, hell yeah. And they're like, anyway, you put it underneath your wrist like this so you can sneaky. And the Viking, which I actually kind of like this beat, he's like, fuck that. I'm putting it up here so everybody can see this fucking kick-ass wrist blade I have, which is hilarious.
Also, this is more of a connection to assassins than both of the previous games, right?
Yeah. Fair, right? Like, yeah. Wait, so it was Odyssey? What was it?
Origins. They don't care about it at all.
What world was Origins? Origins was Egypt, also Egypt,
Egypt,
right?
Origins, Egypt, yeah.
Justin just made me think of something when he said he put the wrist blade on. This game does something really interesting in the same way that Odyssey let you choose to play as a man or a woman as the assassin. This game does that as well, but it also offers this hybridized option. Did anybody go with that? I did not.
Yeah, no.
It sounded fascinating.
It's not basically made specific, where, but
it switches between the two characters based on what makes the most sense or has the most sort of like impact or has the most sort of like different stuff because of the character you're playing. So it'll constantly switch you between the two characters throughout the campaign. I thought that was a fucking wild idea.
Yeah, it's wild.
I wanted to switch, but I actually just sort of default started with the guy, which I don't usually do, especially since the female character has been better for the past few games. But I started with the dude and his performance is just great. Like the performance is really, really good. I'm sure
hers is also good too. I'll probably switch at some point.
Because you can switch at will. You can switch at any time, which I think is cool. I do want to mention just the brief, and you mentioned side missions, but there's some of those are really good. There's some that are on an even smaller scale than that, which I really dug this. They're like world events is what they call them. And they're just like little weird shit that you come across. And some of them are so bizarre. Like, I'll tell you the one that I thought was so strange. You meet this Viking couple. Did y'all do this one?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay, you go to this house. There's this Viking woman. And she's like, hey, I'm feeling kind of down. And you're like, what's up? She's like, well, my dude, there's just not the spark for sex like used to have. And he's like, oh, that's a bummer. And she's like, yeah, it does suck. When we used to raid and stuff, it used to be, like, very horny. And we used to bang all the time, and that was so kick-ass, but that's not the case anymore. And this dude's like, against all anything we know of this character to this point, this character's like, I'll help you, fuck. Come on. And he takes them in their house, and they're like, yes, yes, set this house on fire. And he's like, okay. And you start burning their house down. And she's like, this is working. We're getting horny. And he's like, it is kind of working. I am kind of getting horny. And it's like, smash everything. Burn the house down. And then they're eventually like, we're so horny, we're going to do it. Do you want to do it with us? We can all just kind of have sex. And it's like, I'm loving that. I'm actually loving the energy right now, but I am going to go ahead and move along. And they're like, okay, bye. And you leave. That's a side mission. I mean, that's the mission.
Very, very weird. It's really great.
They're great. Yeah. You meet a dude sleepwalking who's just walking around sleepwalking, and you follow him, and you get to the end, and they have this thought about this discussion of anxiety, like how it's important to have restful sleep. Apropos of nothing, no connection to anything else. And he's like, oh, there's a chest over there if you want it. I kind of led you to a chest. Oh, okay, cool, great. I'll grab this chest before I go. Those are really neat and make walking around the world feel interesting. But overall, okay, this is what I wanted to say. The thing I'm struggling with, and the thing I need you guys to weigh in on, is with all these components, I still feel kind of more milquetoast on it than I thought I would. I feel like there are real peaks and valleys, real ebbs and flows where I'm in it, I'm enjoying it. I feel like the pace is kind of messed up. Like it's too often you'll get like 30 seconds of action and then like I need you to go over to another place, and like the flow is kind of constantly interrupted in that way. I feel like there's way too much traversal in this big open world that isn't always like the most fun to wander around. It doesn't have that kinetic sense that like city-based Assassin's Creed games have had, where it's like just fun to run around.
Yeah, I want to talk about the world real quick, and I know we're running a little long, but
yeah, please.
This was the big turning point for me. When I started playing the game, I was like, holy shit, you start the game in Norway, huge like fjords and giant spiky mountains, and it's like an outrageous map. And I was like super jazzed about that, but I knew that there was another map coming, and there is, spoiler alert, you go to England, you know, within the first like 6 hours of the game. And when I was playing in Norway, it was like, wow, this is like Breath of the Wild. Like, this is more about the environment than it is like the individual, like human, like Assassin's Creed-y stuff. And then you go to England, and England is predominantly like rolling hills and maybe little mountains here and there, and then like little cities. But generally speaking, like, it's pretty, I've been like all the way north, all the way south. It is very, very similar throughout. And you don't even have those, like in early Assassin's Creed games, those like cities that were like very different from one another, Florence versus wherever. You don't really have that. There are cities, but they're much smaller and kind of more uniform. And it
A lot of marshy areas too that are like a bummer traverse. Just not fun.
I was just really disappointed that like the environmental diversity didn't match what Norway sort of promised, which is like, holy shit. Like climbing mountains in Norway feels amazing. It is like you're on this spiky precipice in the middle of nowhere and you could see for miles and miles, and you just never get that in England, which is kind of a drag.
Can I real quick, I would love to hear just overall how it's working for you. Like that's what I was trying to get at. I don't know. It's kind of fun, but it peaks and it you know.
I think it's like a very good game, but does not feel like I was hoping for more of an evolution over the Assassin's Creed model. And really, once I got to England, it felt like a return to games that I've played many, many times before.
If we hadn't played Odyssey, then I think that this game would like really knock your socks off. But I think that it's not as iterative.
I think that's the problem. I think the game that Russ is wanting is Odyssey. I think this game tries to tie together what Odyssey did with the Assassin's Creed formula. And like that is in the camp that you grow. It is in the environments that you go around. It is in like bring back weird things from previous games, like the chasing the flying tattoo sheets, like the music sheets in previous games. Even there are VR platforming puzzles, which are done in third person in this game, but are very clearly inspired by the first person version of it in Assassin's Creed Revelations. Like this is a Assassin's Creed game for people who like the entire series, for better and for worse.
All right,
Anima stuff is very light too.
One of the questions that we got from a few people, and Jim Redding on Twitter asked basically like, "How do you feel about the split timeline stuff and how it is integrated in this game?"
I felt terrible about it literally from the first Assassin's Creed game and continue to do so. I do not give a fuck about Desmond Miles and all the other people in modern day. Do not give a fuck.
I think it's one of the things that could make this franchise really special, and they haven't capitalized on it in probably 5, 6, 7 years. I feel like the problem with this one, and it's been, I think, recurring for a while, is it's so infrequent that the Animus is in any way mentioned or brought up or visited or taken out of that it feels like an absolute momentum killer. It doesn't feel like you cannot keep up with the characters there when you're checking in on them every 6 to 8 hours. Like it's just not, it's not something that
I am an anomaly.
You're constantly reminded of.
I've always liked this stuff.
Oh my God.
Even the Revelations thing, which is the weird first person, like trying to do a John Updike short story stuff. I love it. I think it's much better now because it is so much, it's not used nearly as much. The other thing though is I think they're smart, assuming they're doing with Valhalla what they did with Odyssey, which is they know that not everybody loves this stuff, but the hardcore players do. So they save a lot of it for the DLC. The Odyssey's DLC is where you really get into what is happening outside of the Animus.
Werewolf Lesbian on Twitter also asked, any LGBT plus content? And yes.
Yes, quite a bit, actually.
But the game is kind of sexless in a weird way.
Yeah.
Compared to Odyssey?
Yeah.
Justin just told a short story about fucking burning down the house, it's like jam.
Silly, but not like anything else than that most of the time. It feels
there have
kinda,
been a couple of LGBTQ relationships that have been either alluded to or directly referenced that are treated very matter-of-factly, I would say. It's not like they hang a lantern on it. I mean, it's just sort of... it gives the Vikings, and I don't have no idea if this is true, but it makes them feel like sort of progressive in their values, in the sense that like there's not a lot of mores or hangups,
it doesn't
right?
Feel
like there's not a sense of like, ew, you like boys? Like there's
and when
no,
I say sexist, I mean across the board. I'm not just talking about like LGBTQ stuff. I'm saying I just think it's just kind of, it doesn't seem to be the interest of the game.
Yes.
I love the slider. There's a switch in the menus that say nudity. Do you want nudity on or off? And then there's a descriptor of it. And it says, decides whether or not characters appeal fully clothed, as in naked females. It's like, okay, or topless women. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Oh, no, that's interesting.
Yeah, no,
on
okay,
the slider
cool.
thing.
There's no dongs.
Really quick.
There's no dongs, don't worry.
Caroline asked, how approachable is the new AC for casual, not very good players? I like the old AC games because I can pick them up, play without spending hours feeling like I'm awful at it. There are so many sliders it's in this wild. Game. Whether it's making stealth easy or making difficulty easy, turning off the gore, turning off, I mean, variations of gore. If you are looking for an opportunity to get back into the series, I think this is the most accommodating.
Yeah, and you... Yep.
I'm playing on a default difficulty in terms of the combat, and I honestly have considered turning it up a little bit because it's just, and I'm rushing in and just smashing everybody with axes, and I'm finding it very easy.
I turn the stealth all the way down, like to the easiest level, because frankly, it's just kind of annoying to be spotted by enemies and not really know like what their vision cone looks like.
There's an exploration difficulty you choose right up front, which I thought was kind of cool, like how much information you want.
What else are you playing right now?
I'll go real quick because I've only had it for half a day, or I guess 24 hours now, is Destiny 2 Beyond Light. New expansion just dropped yesterday, and I haven't like finished the campaign. They added a whole new basically element type on top of the three that were already there and have been there since the launch of Destiny 1, which is pretty ambitious, but like I haven't even unlocked that class yet on my main character because you do that when you finish the campaign. So I'll probably have more to say about it, but it's always so fucking nice to return to Destiny because that game is still the best feeling shooter that exists in the world. Yeah. And even without like getting a full deep dive into what they've done differently with character customization and everything, which it seems like they've opened up the gates even more and let you define how you want to play and make your character. Just playing that game after taking a break and just like popping the heads of some aliens and like jumping around and throwing abilities around is like so fucking fun. So I'll probably have more to talk about, but that is out.
I played Control on Switch last night. I just like found my way into the eShop and noticed it there, and I remember hearing about it because it runs off the cloud, and I hadn't really tried anything like that on Switch before. It was the best cloud gaming experience I've ever had in any video game ever. It is unbelievable.
Sorry, I'm confused. It's on Switch, but it's on the cloud.
So you play it on Switch, but it is powered by a cloud connection like you would, you know, with any other cloud service. So the install file is not on your Switch. You're basically just...
You're streaming it.
You're streaming it.
Playing a like full-on AAA console, beautiful console game at 60 frames per second on your handheld Switch is a bizarre trip.
Yeah. I tried it too.
Does it cost full price? Is it $60?
I think it's 40 something. But there's a demo. So if you want to just try it out, you can just try the demo.
This is what I wanted to ask, Russ, is because I tried this too, and the demo is free to let you see basically if you have a juicy enough internet pipes to make it work. I could not. There's like a little Wi-Fi icon in the top corner to show you like how strong your connection is. And it goes up to 4 bars. For whatever reason, I couldn't get it past 3, and I have like a really good connection, and it introduced just enough like input lag that I did not pick it up, even though I would be interested.
Yeah, so I would say definitely test it out. I think it's heavily dependent on how close you are to the servers. I'm sure there's a server in New York. There might not be a server in Austin, and that might be the differentiator here.
Do you think West Virginia?
What?
West Virginia.
Oh, yeah, no, that's where actually the server farm is in West Virginia, so you're fine.
Yeah, I finished 13 Sentinels. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about it. We will talk about it on the Game of the Year episode, and somebody else needs to actually play the game.
I'll play it.
Please.
I played it.
You guys all played it.
I read it.
the ending is absolutely fantastic.
I bet you couldn't. I hear it's a real page turner. You just can't put it down.
It's an RTS game at the end.
Sure. Reading this shit. That is going to do it for us for this week. Next week, we're going to be talking about the PlayStation 5. Let me do a quick tracking update from Jeff. Hasn't shipped yet. Supposed to be here tomorrow by 10 p.m. Hasn't shipped quite
yet. He's putting the finishing touches on it, old Jeff.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. But we'll be back with you if you've got questions about PlayStation 5. Send them to us. mail@besties.fan. Besties.fan is the URL you can choose to share the show. We're on Twitter @TheBestiesPod. That's also where you can find a link to our mailing list. Please share the show with people. We would love to do more besties, but that relies entirely on you letting everybody know about this program. So if you could do that, it would mean a lot to us. But that is going to do us for this week. So Russ, did you have something to add? You had double horns up. You're just about to rock.
I'm genuinely excited for you guys to actually play the PS5. I'm like really curious what you guys think.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to it.
Assuming Jeff makes it happen.
That is going to do it for us. Be sure to join us again next week for the besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
It's a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!